Welcome to Bessemer, a podcast about healing, addiction, psychology, and spirituality. So welcome again to episode 2. Today we're going to be talking about the body and why the body is so important in recovery. So Dr. Swartz, would you be so kind to let us know your thoughts about this topic?
So what if we, as a field, in terms of people who work at rehabs, trying to help people put their substance use disorder into long-term remission, what if we are wrong about how we view the body? I'm starting to wonder if maybe substance abuse, alcohol, drugs, is an attempt, however misguided, to deal with a body that can't relax, whether due to trauma or anxiety. You know, so often we have clients who say, I can't sit still. I'm very restless. I just feel this like feeling inside my body. You know, what if by not addressing that directly with the body, we're missing out on a really important pathway to helping more people put this disease into remission?
I totally agree. It's so interesting that you mentioned it because just today I was working with a client, and every time I put the needles on his body, it seems like he cannot relax. And it seems like he is counting the minutes backwards. So the agony, which is not really painful at all, but he perceives like being in that unmovable position. He feels like trapped there. I can see his face of anguish. And I ask him, is there anything, you know, that is painful right now? Is anything bothering you? Nope. But you can clearly see it in his body expression. So I agree. There's so many clients in addiction that they have this body sensations, and sometimes they're not even aware of it. Sometimes they don't even know that they're so stressed, that they're so, I'm going to use the word anxious. And their body is so entangled with this anxiety, with this fear, with this trauma. And sometimes they can't see it. And what better way to address it, like through the body?
Well, I'm starting to wonder if maybe that is the only way to address it, or the most effective, efficient way to address it. You know, when I think about restlessness, you know, as a psychologist, as someone who's worked with, you know, people talking and working on the mind stuff so long, I think, oh, you know, maybe it's about they can't stop thinking about something, which I also know is true. I think a lot of addicts talk often about, I can't stop thinking, I can't shut down my mind, I can't shut off my mind. So there is that aspect, but again, I really wonder to what extent it's a physical feeling of jitteriness, restlessness, hypervigilance, anxiety, and that we really miss an important opportunity by not addressing it directly. And then I think about, you know, the acupuncture psychology treatments that we've done. How is it that 6 or 7 needles put into a certain channel elicit traumatic memories or painful memories, and really put a person into those events again? And oftentimes, right, memories they've completely forgotten or memories they didn't think were that important. And sometimes I've heard you say that even when I'm not there, when it's not an acu-psych treatment, you've still seen that just from straight acupuncture.
That's right. And again, it comes back to the center of that the body and the mind are not separated, right? So whatever we do to the body, it will have a repercussion in the mind and vice versa. So the needles do have a reaction in the brain. They start to liberate endorphins, encephalins, all kinds of stuff. And it activates different areas that are related sometimes to pleasure areas, sometimes to areas that have to do with memory formation, like nucleus accumbens. And that's one of the theories behind putting the needles and you being able to remember those memories, because those the areas that the needles ignite or activate are the same areas that were used during the traumatic memory to create the memory.
All right. Yeah, and just now, you know, when you were talking about, you know, you put the needles into this person and they clearly looked from a couple different, you know, angles, like they were very much in pain. And yet, what was their report? No, I'm not in pain. Now, maybe they were just trying to convince you that they weren't having this reaction. That's one reason. I kind of hope it's that one. Or it could be that they're really not aware that they're in pain. So if they're not aware that they're in pain, you know, that's really concerning. Because to what extent are they in pain because of the addiction, but they're not aware of it, and so they don't take the action to protect themselves or save themselves. You know, this goes deep, and I think sometimes the same thing happens with their emotions, where they don't know they're sad, they don't know they're angry, they don't know they're scared. Why? Because they were taught that those feelings are not allowed, they disown those feelings, but it's like they become lost in themselves, and it seems like maybe the same thing can happen inside the body.
And I believe it can. That's one of the ways to see it, and also camouflage, right? We put this mask in front of us to pretend that everything is okay.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think that people develop those defenses because they have to. That's my theory. You know, those things aren't natural. They're developed for a purpose, and I think you're right. I think it is to avoid punishment or avoid ridicule or avoid rejection. And, you know, it's not easy to build those processes. People do, and then they forget. They forget that they built them, and they forget that they can dismantle them. You know, and sometimes I think that's the work of therapy and rehab, is teaching them this was a choice. This became second nature, but it doesn't have to stay that way. And then when I think about EMDR, right, I often tell people, look, we live from our heart and our gut. And so the job is to get the mind more in line with the heart and the gut. And it's really about starting to trust the body, starting to explore what is true for the body. And that's what I think EMDR does so well. I feel like it consults the body continuously, almost like treating the body like a touchstone or like a lie detector. Is this true? Is this true? Is this accurate? And once people start to realize like the answer is inside of them, it just helps them calm down. And also once they realize like, oh, like it's not in the body, it's not as chaotic and crazy and changing all the time like it is in the mind. And it kind of settles them down. And once we get the mind, the thinking process, more in line with what's true for them in their heart and their gut, they start to feel more congruent, more connected with themselves, calmer. And I like to think, you know, they start to experience a peace they've never maybe experienced before.
Wow, how relieving, you know, to listen that the answer is inside of you, right? That you don't really have to do any crazy stuff or right or anything so difficult except just being yourself, right? Except just opening to who you really are.
Well, and I know, you know, with you, I'm preaching to the choir here, because as an acupuncturist, that's kind of what you're about, that you are just helping the body to heal itself, that the body is basically self-healing.
That's right. And again, I mean, if we go to the basis of how people heal, right? If you go to a medical practitioner and you tell them about the body, that's all they know, right? You treat the body through the body, right? And that's everything. If you tell them about the mind, they might be a little bit more skeptical, like, what? The mind? What does that have to do with anything, right? I'm changing the level of bicarbonate. I'm changing the level of hemoglobin. They're all physical stuff. So the mind, not so much. And if you tell them about spirituality, well, I mean, some of them clearly will say that it is important. Some of them will like, you know, you're completely insane. But yes, I mean, the modalities in traditional Chinese medicine have to do with the three aspects, the mind, the psyche, the body, and the spirit, for sure.
And then I think the other thing that happens with a lot of people with addiction is they treat their body like kind of like the enemy, you know? And again, I think this might be related to trauma, where the child thinks that, oh, it's my body that caused the problem, or, you know, it's my body or it's my appetite that caused me to get in trouble or get beat. So then it sets up this kind of conflict with the body. And I really think it's crucial for that to change. And I think that by really, you know, helping people have a different experience of their body, maybe that conflict can go down. Maybe they can be on the same team and they can start to have more compassion for the body. And I'm also starting to really believe that, you know, the body is where all the misdirected emotional energy sort of goes and it gets rancid and rotten over time. And I think it leads to a lot of, right, unease, dis-ease in the body that people are sort of not aware of. And that needs to be cleaned out. And then people can feel better. But I do see over and over again that people learn how to consciously, on some level, misdirect, redirect their emotions, right? Away from anger into happiness, away from sadness into contentment, away from fear into confidence. But you really can't do that with emotions. You know, it's not authentic. It's not accurate. And so that energy just gets trapped in the body. And if people can stop doing those processes, that's a very important step. And then also if they can deal with the backlog that's sort of stuck in the body, that helps a lot.
So it basically, is it like accepting, right? Like I have fear right now or anger and just sitting with it more than trying to transform it?
Well, I think it's like, you know, we were just talking about that some people got punished for certain emotions. So they learned how to kind of transport them at the source. It's a very difficult thing to do, and energetically it's a very costly thing to do. It's a very sort of pathological thing to do. It sets you up for a lot of different diseases, whether that's eating disorder, addiction, just loss of self, loss of confidence, loss of joy. It does all of that. And so the process is teaching them, okay, you're doing this, it feels natural, it's not natural, so it's time to stop doing it. And that's going to help them just feel much more sane and much, much healthier. And then it's also going to help with the overall emotional energy. You know, I think that misdirected energy, that's what contributes to or causes anxiety, I think. It's just energy. And when it gets messed with and when it gets sent to the wrong places, it can create a lot of problems.
But one of the things you were saying that, you know, it reminded me how important is the body in addiction. It's also remembering how much damage addiction has created to the body, right? So not only emotional, but the deficiencies, for example, that happen with alcohol addiction, right? You have folic acid deficiency, vitamin B6, thiamine. You know, they're real. And the malnutrition, right? The muscle wasting, the weight loss, the changes of heart rate that happens with stimulants. I mean, all these things, imagine, you know, you're taking stimulants for 3 days, you're taking MDMA, you don't eat for 3 days. I mean, clearly, the stress that you put to your body is tremendous. And it is part of the pathology. It is part of the things that we need to correct. And, you know, obviously a diet that replaces all these elements are important, right? So self-care, taking care of your body is one of the most important things. Because in addiction, you have really damaged your body.
Yeah, I think you're right that there's a lot of reparative work that needs to happen. And that can be really hard for people emotionally to look at what they've put their body through. And we've seen such terrible things, but admittedly, we've seen some of the most extreme cases out there. I mean, I'm thinking about the extremities swelling. I'm thinking about people with very distended bellies. I mean, young people. And you're so right to start to really care for the body and have compassion for the body and try to heal what damage the addiction has done. It's really important.
That's right. Yeah, you made me remember of people very young with gastritis, right, because of the alcohol intake or acid reflux. And so the substance has been so much for so long that it has eroded, right, the mucus protection of the stomach lining, and or people that we've seen with abscesses in their arms, right, because of needles. I mean, this is real direct damage to the brain. I mean, to the brain and the body, right? And it, you can see it, and it's like you say, it's very hard for them to sometimes accept it, right? Everything is their fault. They see their arms and they say, it's my fault. I put the needle. And taking that guilt off to heal the mind, to heal the body together, right? They go together. So, yes, it is very important.
And I'm thinking about pancreatitis. How many people, when they get to a certain level of alcohol abuse, they start having those run-ins with pancreatitis, and And it's just devastating. And even though doctors tell them you have to quit, not one more drop, they can't quit. You know, it's difficult what they put their body through. And the only other thing, and this might be related to a point I made earlier, but it might be a slightly different. You know, I really wonder if the need for the drug or the alcohol is related to a desperation to stop or reduce some kind of physical sensations. Maybe the physical sensations accumulate and become kind of, you know, unbearable for the person. And maybe, I don't know, this is where I'm getting sort of experimental. Maybe they have this kind of free-floating physical anguish and almost like a lightning storm that looks for a lightning rod. Maybe it's that physical sensation that then looks for a thought process or something to focus on that kind of explains it. But what if the real origin is physical, not mental? And what if we, at Bessemer, by focusing first on the body, you know, what if we can get underneath that and dismantle it and maybe help many more people that aren't helped with this kind of mind-heavy treatment? Definitely we have to treat the mind, but what if we need to treat the body first?
Right, and I think they go hand in hand, right? To even separate them is difficult. How to start the treating the body without the mind, or how to treating the mind without the body. And you bring an interesting point, you know, because if you see people with withdrawal, right, they have their hands are shaking. And these are physical symptoms, right? This is the body saying, whoa, okay, I need this, right? There's something wrong in my brain. There's something wrong in the chemistry. And that's one of the things that makes the people go to get it again, right? Because the body is telling you, dude, there's something wrong. And you take again the drug, you take again the alcohol, and it comes down, right? So the body is one of the main problems at the very beginning, because the body, it has this dependence. That's why it's called dependence. The body's telling you, I need it. And afterwards, after the withdrawal have passed, whatever time it takes you, 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, some say even years, there might be some other things, right? Like what we're talking about, like what I saw today. You know, clients that have, you know, 2 months of sobriety, 3 months of sobriety, and they're still having this emotional body responses without them being aware of them, without acknowledging them. And I think it plays part to the complete pathology of them, because it's always like in the back of their minds, in the back of their bodies, it's always the cassette playing that they really have anxiety, that they really are putting a facade to the outer world. And sooner or later, it's going to catch up with you. So it might not catch up with you in the meeting. It might not catch up with you when you are playing soccer. But it's going to catch you when you're isolated. It's going to catch you when you're at night in your bed. And it's going to knock on your door. Hey, you know, I still feel threat of something. And we haven't dealt with it. So, yes, separating the withdrawal part is important. And then observing if it's still there, you know, this pathology in the body.
Yeah, I don't know if this relates to what you're saying at all, but when you were just speaking, what I was reminded of is I always tell people, when the face you show the world is very, very different from the face you really feel, like when you present yourself to the world very, very differently from how you actually feel, when that difference is large, that's fuel for addiction. It's just a matter of time before you're going to use again, because living like that is exhausting, it's inauthentic, and it creates loneliness. So it's just a matter of time before you use. When you can bring those two faces close together, when how I really feel is pretty close to the face I show the world, then the fuel, the drive, the compulsion for addiction is way, way less. And, you know, I think that when we're able to express to the world how we really feel, more or less, closely, you know, when they're not such a big difference, when they're pretty close, I think it really helps us to feel understood and to feel like we're getting some feedback on it that's valuable, so we don't feel that desperation and we don't feel that terrible sense of being lost to ourselves or just lost, you know? And I do think it contributes to a greater sense of connection and way less loneliness. You know, one thing I was thinking about is how, you know, you told me when you were learning to be a doctor and a surgeon in Mexico, and you somehow learned that with 5 points you could take away a migraine, and how deeply that spoke to you because you didn't want to be so invasive and you didn't want to be so medication heavy. You wanted to heal, you know, in simpler, kind of more, I don't know.
Just with touch. I mean, imagine you can help another human being just with your touch. It's just amazing. So I'm pretty sure all the masseuses that are hearing right now are like, yeah, we can do that.
And then I'm also thinking about all the people we've known who use intravenous drugs, and they come to you for acupuncture because having you insert those needles somehow relieves something inside of them.
Oh, totally. I mean, the intravenous journey of drugs, you know, there is a sensation of the chill with the needle in the vein. And this chill effect is very similar to acupuncture because it is a needle. Clearly, we don't put it inside the vein. But sometimes I do ask them, okay, where did you use to shoot? Which was your favorite one? And they tell me this one, you know, this vein. And I said, okay, and I'll go near it. And I put the needles near it. If they're acupoints, if not very near. And, you know, they get this rush, right? And these people are having cravings. Believe me, they're the ones that if I don't do this, they're going to go out and use. So it is a technique to help them to get this rush or this craving or this similar emotion without anything. So somebody would say, what if they get addicted to that? Well, it's fine with me. There's nothing in the needles. It's perfectly fine and safe.
But yeah, I'm thinking about all the people we've had who have had, you know, whose drug use has included needles, whether meth users or heroin users or whatever, and they come to you, hey, you know, help me out, because for some reason that acupuncture really soothes something inside of them and kind of settles them back down, you know, and that's a really great thing. And then I think about how much acupuncture has been found to help with craving.
Right. I mean, it goes all down to those body sensations and how similar they are. And just because of the location, right, if you think of the brain map, there's this somatosensory cortex in your brain that has a map of every part of your body, from your pinky all the way to the top of your head. So it activates every time you touch that area, every time you hurt that area, whatever that somatosensory cortex knows. So whenever you put a needle, it also gets activated. Whether the needle has heroin, cocaine, or nothing like acupuncture needles. So you're ignited the same area. You're sending the same signal. So clearly that has to do with the pathology of cravings and how to relieve them with acupuncture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I'm thinking of, strangely maybe, is, you know, I maybe had one acupuncture treatment before I started working there. And then since, you know, all of us who work there got to see you sometimes for acupuncture, there have been so many times when you've done acupuncture on me and I've been like, oh my God, I didn't even know I was tense. But after acupuncture, I'm so relaxed. And it's funny because a good friend of mine recently started doing acupuncture to help her have a baby, you know. And she was like, I just had no idea how tense I was. And that acupuncture just helps me relax at such a deep level. And I'm like, I'm thinking, that's me, you know. And I feel like maybe for people with addiction, it's maybe 10 or 50 times worse, that lack of awareness that they are completely stressed out and they're not even aware of it. They're just so used to it. But the acupuncture helps them relax and helps them get out of that pain. And maybe over time, they can learn a new normal. You know, maybe there'll be less drive and less need to use the drug or alcohol.
Oh, it brings me back to another form to explain it. Because, you know, many people cannot sleep at night because they're super tense, because they're super anxious, because their brain can't stop. And they have this tension in their bodies. And they come to me and say, I just can't sleep. I didn't sleep anything last night. I was tossing and turning. I woke up at 1 a.m. and I couldn't back to sleep. And I put them the needles. And in 10 minutes, I hear them snore. So it's beautiful because it's exactly what you're saying. they're able to relax, their body is able to calm down, and then they're able to sleep. And the same thing happens to me, just you were mentioning it. To me, the most interesting way is when I do cupping, right? When you get this, for the people that don't know, cupping is this therapy where you put this hot glasses with a vacuum in your skin and they pull out your skin. It might seem a little bit painful.
Okay, wait, I'm going to explain that again because that sounded so weird. Okay, so they're I don't know if you've seen these cups, but they're like they look like little tiny jelly jars, except they're round, and it's the vacuum. So this like lighter creates a vacuum inside the cup, inside the bulb, and then when it's immediately placed on the skin, it actually pulls the skin and the muscle and everything a little bit into it. And to me, I mean, again, this is something I never experienced until I started working there and I started getting cupping from you, but it feels like a massage, and it's amazing.
Yes, I'm so glad you explained it.
I don't know before. If I explained it better.
But you explained it better.
I hope so.
If not, you know, the clients or the people hearing it, they're gonna think we're doing BDSM or some crazy
scary.
Stuff.
Scary. It sounded scary.
No, cupping is a very ancient therapy, and I think Dr. Suarez explained it better than me. So yes, so I used to put it on my skin, and then I would feel the relaxation, and I was like, dang. I thought I was relaxed, you know, and you clearly needed more. And as you say, you know, it's very interesting that if we as professionals, clearly we are also stressed and clearly we also need relaxation, imagine people with suffering with addiction.
Well, you know, and just now when you talked about sleep, I mean, I cannot count how many people have come to me that's why they were using alcohol. That's why they were using pot. That's why they were using substances. It's because they couldn't sleep. And I've heard people say, I've never been able to sleep. I've always had insomnia, you know, and they live with this torture and this exhaustion. And I've also heard, you know, at the other end of the spectrum, you know, sometimes that's why people have to give up alcohol, is because you get to a certain level of alcohol abuse, you can't sleep anymore. And eventually the sleep becomes so, so, so difficult to find that people eventually kind of tap out and they're like, okay, I guess I have to give up alcohol because I cannot sleep anymore. You know, it becomes sort of torturous. And I think, you know, to what extent is that need for sleep, which is a natural need, right? If we don't sleep long enough, we're going to die. You know, to what extent is that inability to sleep either driving them into the arms of substances or, you know, completely destroying their lives where they have to just make big changes, including giving up substances to sleep. And if they could have satisfying, adequate sleep without substances, that would be huge.
That's one of the other reasons to heal the body, right? To focus on the body first. If you can give this relaxation, whether it is acupuncture, a massage, or some cupping, or some herbs, or body movement, right? Like strenuous cardiovascular exercise, or not even strenuous, but cardio exercise, yoga, tai chi, where you really involve the body so much that it also helps it to calm down, to relax. And sometimes purely exhaustion will make you go to sleep. Mm-hmm. So if you take it to also the extreme for a couple of days, especially at the beginning, you know, you do your cardio several times a day, your body just gives in. It's like, okay, I have to go to sleep. There's no other way.
Yeah, and it does seem like so many experts, you know, who talk about how to have better sleep, they talk often about exercise and the importance of exercise. So yeah, I think there's that piece. And, you know, again, in terms of my own healing and how that happened, you know, it was a lot about the body. The body just gave me a new sense of myself, and the body gave me such peace and such kind of, it showed me a more doable, sane, you know, human-sized way to live. And that's why I think it's important that we have it kind of first and foremost at Bessemer, is that I think this is the path to healing. And I'm hoping that we can maybe help a lot of people who haven't yet been helped through any traditional methods.
So one of the last parts that I just want to add is that, you know, sometimes when we have pain in the body, It's a very interesting concept. Of course, the goal is to get rid of the pain. And sometimes when you try to meditate or when you try to do some specific exercises, it doesn't let you do them. Like yours truly, sometimes I cannot do a lot of meditations because my leg hurts, or I cannot do some exercise because my leg hurts. and how to deal with that. Yeah, no, clearly the answer is not OxyContin or any other opioids for that matter. But, you know, they say when you meditate, focus on the breathing. But, you know, sometimes you cannot focus on the breathing because there's so much pain. So you also have to admit that, just like the emotions we were talking before, and accept, you know, the grief, the anger, the fear, you have to also accept the pain and be with the pain. Because you cannot transform it into just breathing, breathing, breathing. The pain doesn't go away. So accept the pain, focus on the pain, and let it heal. Not by trying to avoid it, you know, just making peace with it. It is there. Just say hi to it. You know, absorb it. Let it be one with you, not trying to fight it.
I think that is such a difficult thing for us to accept, you know, the idea that we just need to kind of be okay with or embrace or accept the pain. I think that is so difficult. And I think that really goes back to what is your philosophy? Because I think some people feel guilty for accepting the pain, like they shouldn't feel that pain. Or they feel like, you know, what's wrong with me? I need to get rid of this pain. You know, so they have all these feelings around why the pain is there, or like they're letting the pain stay. So I feel like it's a really radical departure, what you're suggesting. And I think, you know, it goes to the human condition. You know, do we have to suffer? And I think that a lot of people feel like, heck no. And if I'm suffering, I'm messing up somehow. So, you know, it requires kind of a real change of your headspace.
To me, I feel angry when I have the pain. And I feel different, like broken, right? So making peace with that brokenness, you know, and trying to smooth that broken glass, you know, those rough edges with self-love, with saying it's okay, you know, it's okay that you have pain. It's there. It's in you. It's fine.
This is making me think about two things. Number one, I think about the times when you've talked about how you wish that, you know, opiates and pain relievers were given out less and that people would get acupuncture more, because acupuncture can address chronic pain. They can address acute pain, pain of all kinds. But the problem is maybe that people don't want pain to cure pain, and they're scared of acupuncture and they think it's going to hurt. Meanwhile, that's part of how acupuncture works. And I think of that friend you have who uses bigger needles and kind of rougher insertion because he feels that that's the right way to do acupuncture, and he might be right. You know, and I know you use thinner needles and a different kind of insertion to reduce the pain, and yet all of acupuncture seems to rely on using the body's pain response to address pain, you know. And yet how many people really are afraid of acupuncture, afraid of needles, afraid of pain, even if it might be healing?
I mean, when I went to China, it did look like medieval torture chambers. You know, there was smoke coming out of the beds. There were some screams. and they clearly use much more thicker needles than they use here in the U.S. So it's a manipulation that does require some pain in order to work better. And maybe you can put electricity, right? So electricity, some people really like it because even enhances more the stimulation of the brain, of the body, of the muscles, of the nerves, and it can help the body heal faster.
And I was thinking about something else. You know, we had a teacher who used to say that people can create their own pain, including their own chronic pain, with chronic tension. That maybe their anxiety or their fear or their anger or their defensive posturing, and they can develop this, you know, these tense kind of responses to things, and they can hold the tension and hold it and hold it, and it can create pain. So, you know, I think that sometimes, you know, the way we create pain, the way we can actually accidentally, you know, create our own pain for ourselves, it gets overlooked.
Oh, definitely. I mean, just everybody tells you, right, where do you hold your stress? Oh, in my shoulders. Right? Everybody knows that, like, intuitively. Some people hold them in their lower back. Some people hold them in the upper back. Some people in their head, on the muscles of their face, their jaws, Some people cannot sleep because their jaws are so clenched all the time during the day and at night when they're sleeping. So definitely tension, stress, anxiety, irritability, they all tense your muscles.
And it reminds me too that, you know, part of the problem is just lack of awareness.
Yes.
You know, like I have, you know, pain in my neck and upper back and shoulders, and it's just, I'm not aware. I'm jutting my head forward. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of that pain, and it just accumulates, you know? And then I wonder, you know, why I'm looking for some kind of instantaneous relief, you know? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think that's, you know, that's what people look for in drugs and alcohol, is that instantaneous, easy relief. They want to go from, you know, a level of stress of 100 down to zero in like 2 minutes. And only drugs and alcohol are going to get you that. You know, it's going to take you 30, 45 minutes to do it through yoga or a walk around the park or swim a couple laps, you know, and everybody wants it right now. And it's about slowing down, taking it easy, going the slow road, not having things be so instantaneous.
Oh, and it's not sometimes, just it's all the time. I mean, addicts, we just want it now. If one shot doesn't give it to you, we want two shots. If one line doesn't do it, give me two more. You know, we definitely want the instant gratification, and that's one of the problems of addiction, that the reward system has been hijacked by the drug, right? So before, you had a very nice relationship, and that gave you the high. Before, you play with your dog, and that gave you the high. But now you do a line of coke and that gives you 10 times the high. So it has been hijacked.
When I think about, you know, the work we want to do with people, helping them get in touch with their body, it's about getting them to a place where they actually feel really good in their body without drugs and alcohol. And they get a new kind of aesthetic about how it's supposed to feel. About how to relax, what relaxation is. How many of our clients don't even know what it is? They haven't felt it for years. So how to get them back into kind of a right perspective, what tension is, what relaxation is, and give them that awareness. You know, awareness creates change in and of itself. And it's about, I think, giving people that awareness.
The Bessemer Podcast is sponsored by Addiction Research and Healing Sanctuary, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to relieve the suffering of people living with addiction and to help them achieve their goal of long-term remission, regardless of their ability to pay. This endeavor is only possible through your contribution and donations. Please help us by visiting our website, addictionandhealing.com, and subscribing to our podcast.